You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Yesterday, the End of Life Choice Bill passed its third and final reading with a 70-50 vote in favor. David Seymour made two big amendments on the bill. Firstly, that doctors will be charged with the responsibility of intervening if they believe coercion is occurring. Secondly, that a doctor is not allowed to initiate the conversation of euthanasia. Organization Doctors Say No representative Amanda Landers joins me to discuss the bill as a whole, but also how feasible these recent amendments are in practice for doctors.
It would pretty much change the way that we work and change the way that we interact with our patients, particularly those of us who work with frail elderly, those with illnesses that are life-limiting, which is all ages. We would be the ones probably the most impacted, but particularly doctors in hospital, they're used to working in a service that treats acute illnesses. They're used to working with people with chronic illness and trying to improve their quality of life, and this would pretty much cut through all of that and change things overnight, really.
Mm. So what would that actually look like? Do you think doctors would be more inclined to talking about euthanasia with their patients?
I think it's already raised people's awareness of this issue, and in my experience, not in a particularly good way. The issue is that people who have lost their good health walk that tightrope of feeling like they're a burden, walk that tightrope of feeling like their life is becoming more pointless, more hopeless, and this really just confirms that. I've had lots of patients in the last couple of years since this debate has started come to our service much more hopeless, and I think that's a huge danger of this so-called debate. I think it's actually had a negative impact on our community already that I don't think anyone's really talking about. And the difference that I have with my work is that I go into homes. I don't work in hospital. I don't work in a GP practice. I actually walk into people's lounges and I see their families, and I see, I see what's actually going on for people in a much broader way than most doctors.
So have you found it has negatively impacted people's mental health who might be going through very negative health conditions?
Yeah, definitely. Like, just in the last few weeks, I see people at home who are still pretty well, still functioning, doing cooking and ironing, but with an illness that's going to limit their life. And they're talking to me about feeling a burden. And I can see that they're still productive. I can see that they're still contributing to society, to their community and to their families, but they're worried now. They're worried that society's telling them that it would just be easier to check out early. And the problem with that is they don't talk to their families about it necessarily. They just sit with that and worry about it and ruminate over it. And unless you are open and honest with your family, and your family has the option to say, of course you're not a burden to us. Of course we want to look after you. Your life's important to us. We want to live every moment of this with you. Unless that conversation happens, people go down a track that they don't need to go down. And this is what this bill does. It opens up that door, and it doesn't allow for the knowledge that some of these families aren't able to talk, aren't able to have those open conversations, and it will actually limit choices ultimately.
Mm. With the conversations that have been raised about this bill, specifically coercion has come up. How difficult is it to detect coercion for doctors?
I think it's virtually impossible to detect all coercion. I'd have to say, with my hand on my heart, I see coercion every week. I see families that are loving and functional subtly and subconsciously coercing their loved ones into all sorts of things that they don't want to do. And they're doing it with the best of intentions. That's the issue. We're not talking about dysfunctional families. They're on another part of the spectrum. We're talking about families who think they're doing the right thing by coercing their loved ones into things they don't want to do. And I'm talking about things like treatments, about moving into residential care, about not moving into residential care. You know, big life decisions that people get coerced into one way or another by people who have the best intentions. And then there's the group that don't have the best intentions. And doctors might be able to pick up some of it, but they're certainly not going to be able to pick up all of it. And even if they do, even if I'm in a home and I can see coercion, really, what am I going to do about it as a doctor? How can I bring it up? How can I criticise someone's family member in front of a patient? It's just not possible. It's completely naive and pretty ignorant to think that doctors are going to be able to stop people being coerced into euthanasia, into having a lethal injection to end their life.
Now, of course, Chris Pank has brought up a few amendments, and as well as David Seymour, who has the two that I'm quite interested in are David Seymour, who has said doctors are able to stop a process of euthanasia if they believe there is coercion, but as well as doctors are not allowed to instigate that conversation of euthanasia. I'm just curious, what do you think about these different amendments that have come up?
Yeah, so the first one is about doctors not being able to bring up euthanasia. How are you going to police that? There is absolutely no way in our health system, in our communities, in our GP practices that's going to be policed. I have no idea how that's ever going to be enacted in practice. It's completely unworkable. The second one, again, that's completely impractical in practice. So if I'm in a home and I can see elder abuse, then I actually have means and ways of instigating protections. But we're talking about the very end of the spectrum, the very end of the continuum. There's a whole raft of coercion that happens that I cannot call out. I might suspect it, I might even see it, but I can't call it out as a doctor. It's completely impractical. It basically, this bill has no understanding about how medicine works, has no understanding about the doctor-patient relationship. It basically just says, we don't care about that. We just want to have our choice, thanks very much. And we don't really care what it means for anyone else. And the issue with that is we're talking about medicine. It's an entire vocation. It's an entire practice that's going to be changed, and politicians are getting to have a say in that. And I find that incredible, because on the ground, at the grassroots level where I am, it's completely unworkable.
Something that was brought up in your press release is that lower socioeconomic people are more vulnerable to coercion. Could you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, well, they already have trouble accessing and having equity of access of health. And they often live in rural areas or in areas that don't have as many general practitioners. They're just really wanting what they're entitled to live, and that's already hard. And so all we're going to see is an increase in inequity of access to healthcare. I mean, something that nobody's really talking about is the cost this is going to have on the health system. And we know the health dollars are scarce. And so something is going to give for this euthanasia bill and the SCN's committee and all the things that are being proposed to actually be paid for. So what's going to be taken away out of the health system to pay for this? And that's not something I've heard anybody talking about. It's always going to have a flow-on effect to those that don't have equal access.
And I guess, like, the crux of this issue really comes down to choice. So should people have the choice to do what they want with their bodies, including euthanasia? What do you think?
Yeah, that comes down to autonomy. And, you know, our society values autonomy so much. It's all about autonomy. The problem with that in practice is your autonomy only goes as far as it impacts on someone else's autonomy. And there are boundaries to autonomy. It's kind of a false promise in many ways. We are governed by laws because there are safety issues or there are issues with stomping on someone else's autonomy. This is asking one New Zealander to assist in a suicide of another New Zealander. There are autonomy issues all over that. It cannot just be down to that 1 or 2% of people who want it. How can it possibly be? It has to look across the entire continuum and the entire society of New Zealand and come up with the best for all. This is a bill for a 1 or 2%. We're supposed to have laws for everybody to protect everybody. Otherwise, we're going to be in chaos pretty quickly.
I might also just touch on those two medical principles that tend to come up quite often, which is the Hippocratic Oath and informed consent. How do you think these two kind of health principles come up when the conversation of euthanasia arises?
Well, the Hippocratic Oath in its present form talks about do no harm, and I can't think of anything too much more harmful than helping someone to and assisting their suicide, but I know that some doctors will say that's compassionate. Now, the issue with that is this bill doesn't say that someone who's expert in end-of-life care comes along and checks out that everything has been done, and this is kind of a last resort. We're going to be having doctors who have no qualifications in end-of-life care, no qualifications in understanding symptom management. I mean, pain comes up all the time, but these are not going to be doctors necessarily that have those skills. These are going to be doctors with an ideological view that it's okay for you to take this lethal injection, and they're not going to really try any other method necessarily or have the skills to. So that's sort of quite scary in a way. The other thing is about informed consent. It again comes back to the autonomy argument. It's kind of a false promise. How do we truly inform you, truly tell you what it would be like to have an operation that goes bad, or truly talk to you about how your wife's going to feel if you have euthanasia in 10 years' time? How are we truly going to inform you about what the consequences are going to be if you have euthanasia? I mean, I talked to a 16-year-old who watched her father die of a brain tumour, and he was told he was going to die within 3 months, and he lived for 8 years. And she was then 11 when he died, and she'd been 3 when he was diagnosed. She got to have 8 years with her father. And she said to me, if he had had euthanasia, I would never have forgiven him. I would have felt abandoned for the rest of my life. And so how could I have informed him of that consequence? Informed consent can only go so far. Otherwise, it's just false promises, really.
In terms of the mental health implications for people who are giving care, what do you think the effects are actually going to be on doctors who administer euthanasia?
Yeah, I think this is a very under-researched area. I did see a paper recently coming out of one of the countries where it's legal, showing that doctors are getting post-traumatic stress disorder. I also know anecdotally that more and more doctors drop off the list to actually participate in euthanasia, and the list just gets smaller and smaller until you have a group of doctors that have quite a strong ideology. I think we should not underestimate the impact that this is going to have on the medical profession. I know several doctors that are probably going to stop practicing if this law comes in. And that's because they just cannot work in that environment. So again, you know, autonomy only goes so far. Autonomy only goes as far as it starts to impact on others. And this has just been discussed in the High Court in Canada. And a Canadian judge has actually said, well, if you don't want to participate, you could go and retrain in some other area of medicine or leave practice. Now that's just, really, is that what our health system wants and our government wants, for doctors to not participate in medicine anymore or to have to retrain in an area that in good faith they went into, thinking that they would not have to participate in something like this. So the ripple effects just go wider and wider and wider, no matter how you look at it.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.